Jesse, I'm Danny's brother. That's pretty much it.
Awesome. Yeah. So today's episode, I guess I didn't really introduce that, but today's episode, we're going to be talking about FAS and FASD. So those stand for, respectively, fetal alcohol syndrome and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which are two rather stigmatized and misunderstood syndromes. So we'll be discussing what it is, reasons why it's so stigmatized, the differences between FAS and FASD, how society treats FASDs, and research into FASDs. So my role in this is that I'm the accessibility collective lead. I talk about really anything related to accessibility. Danny, if you feel comfortable, would you like to share your background with why you are so passionate about FAS and FASD?
So Jesse and I are Métis and Plains Cree. We grew up in the Okanagan. I also want to mention I use she/her. And Jesse, what pronouns do you use?
He, him.
Okay, awesome.
I use she, they.
Awesome. And our grandpa went to Kamloops Residential School, and there was a lot of like alcoholism and issues. And that's very much a pattern throughout the Indigenous community, because residential schools really were not that long ago. So the ripple effects are very much still there. So in our family, Jesse, do you want to share your kind of story of as much as you want to share?
I've grown up entirely with FASD affecting my life,
Sorry.
being it affecting really not how I do things, but how I think about doing things, but just like on a daily basis, like smoking cannabis, drinking all that kind of stuff. I have to take into the more precautions about whether or not I am more likely to get addicted to it than the average person who drinks.
Do you want to share a little bit about your like birth background or adoptive if you want to share anything?
Well, my birth background, I don't really know where to start with that. There's a lot.
Yeah, I guess to put it simply, you have an indigenous biological mother who had a lot of trauma, and she struggled with addiction throughout her pregnancy, and you were born and brought into our family.
Danny, I guess we'll get a little bit into your personal relationship if you feel comfortable later about FAS, but I think now is a good time to start talking about what FAS and what FASD is. So FAS stands for fetal alcohol syndrome. Danny, would you like to tell us a little bit more about that?
So FAS specifically is the most severe and specific condition within the fetal alcohol spectrum. It's characterized by distinct facial abnormalities, growth deficiencies, and central nervous system impairments. Cognitive and behavioral issues are common, including learning disabilities, poor impulse control, and difficulty with social interactions.
So within FAS, I understand there's partial fetal alcohol syndrome.
Yeah, there's really not much research on this, and it's similar to FAS with some but not all of the characteristic facial features. And then there's also alcohol-related neurodevelopmental disorder, ARND, which is absence of physical features seen in FAS, but notable cognitive and behavioral impairments. Challenges may include difficulties with attention, memory, problem-solving, and adaptive functioning.
And then there's also alcohol-related birth defects.
So this is more the physical issues that can be caused by alcohol consumption in pregnancy, in the fetus. So it can result in heart, kidney, or bone defects, and it does not necessarily involve cognitive or behavioral deficits.
So as I'm looking at all the things we just talked about, there's fetal alcohol syndrome, there's partial fetal alcohol syndrome, there's alcohol-related neurodevelopmental disorder and alcohol-related birth defects. As I understand it, this is the fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. This is the spectrum, but FAS is on one end of the spectrum.
I personally, in my background, I was adopted into our family because it was believed that I would have fetal alcohol syndrome. I have a similar story of my biological mother struggling with addiction throughout pregnancy. I've been in and out of the medical system my entire life trying to figure out what happened, and I likely fall into those categories of ARND, but there's really not any resources or diagnostic tools, and I have a ton of diagnoses, and it's completely unknown whether or not that's related. Like if my ADHD is actually part of the FAS, or we don't really know.
Okay. So, Jesse, would you like to talk a little bit, if you feel comfortable, about the differences between FAS and FASD and your personal experience and testimony?
From what at least I've been told on this, FAS is more in relations to when the birth mother drinks and all that. FASD, from again what I've been told, affects the kid more because the birth mother ends up like doing drugs as well.
That falls into the category of the physical abnormalities, which is under FASD. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So FAS is the most severe and specific condition,
mm-hmm.
characterized by distinct facial features, but as we discuss, FASD is a broader term that encompasses FAS.
Yeah,
and
so
conditions with varying levels of severity.
So I fall under the FASD spectrum, and Jesse, your official diagnosis is fetal alcohol syndrome, right?
Fetal alcohol syndrome, yeah.
Okay. I feel like growing up, that's all we really heard was FAS, and then when I started to do research on my
FASD.
Own.
FASD.
Yeah, well, then again, we also grew up with both of our parents. We were adopted into a family where our parents were foster parents as well. So, we were the permanent siblings, and we had many siblings coming in and out, and many, many, many had FAS or FASD. So that was, like, very much a big thing in our home, especially with our parents being Indigenous foster parents. So FAS is diagnosed when the characteristic facial features are present, in addition to neurodevelopmental deficits and prenatal alcohol exposure. FASD is diagnosed based on a wider range of criteria that do not always require the presence of FAS-specific facial features, which include a flat philtrum, so above the upper lip. The ear can be shaped differently, and there could be, I forget what it's called, aphakanthic something folds in the eyes is another thing. And so there's three categories we'll go over of how FASDs affect people, and those are judgment, relationships, and career outlooks. So first, in judgment, individuals with FASDs often struggle with impulse control, leading to impulsivity and sometimes risky decision-making. Difficulty with cause and effect reasoning. There's trouble understanding the consequences of actions, which can lead to difficult judgment. FASD individuals may find it challenging to assess a situation and come up with an effective solution.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us to the second topic that you wanted to talk about within this, which is relationships, Danny.
Yeah, relationships. That definitely relates to that story, Jesse, where that person who didn't have FAS had kind of an assumption that you would act a certain way and assess, like, oh, this is his girlfriend, I'm going to act this very specific way, but that can be really difficult. So that both ties into judgment and relationships. So FASD individuals may have trouble with social interactions, making it harder to establish and maintain relationships. FASD individuals may struggle with impaired language and communication skills that can reduce effective communication, which can cause misunderstanding and conflicts. Individuals with FASDs may struggle with emotional regulation, leading to mood swings and difficulty managing conflict or stress within relationships.
I experience that on a daily with so many people who know that I do have FAS, but still don't necessarily understand that some days, like, I can go from the most incredible, cheerful person to not. My mood swings change a lot throughout the day.
Okay.
Same with managing anger and all that.
Yeah, so it can be difficult in relationships for other people to understand that your feelings aren't necessary towards them, or it's harder for you to assess things in the same way.
And trying to get that point across sometimes may be more difficult.
Yeah, and it's exhausting to have to repeat it.
Yes, very.
To everybody.
Very exhausting to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That definitely stems from people just not understanding what it is and how it affects people.
Yeah, and this kind of, I feel like, is where we can bridge the gap in terms of stigma and misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of mental illness was really misunderstood and is still largely misunderstood now, but there is a lot more understanding, I'd say, of what it is and compassion.
Yeah, I think FAS, though, due to the fact that it's preventable, if you're not adopted, like Jesse is, a lot of people, they won't ever be diagnosed because the mother feels so much shame. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so, so important to have people, individuals with FAS, speaking out, because you usually only hear from the adoptive parents of people with FAS, and they can try to understand, but they never really could fully, and still, like, I can't even fully understand how it feels for you, Jesse. Next, we'll get into career outlooks. So, FASD often leads to learning disabilities and difficulty in school, which can limit your ability to get education and learn what you want to learn. FASD individuals may encounter obstacles in finding and maintaining employment due to cognitive and behavioral challenges that employers might not understand, despite them being supposed to accommodate your disability. There's difficulty with social skills that can impact your relationships with coworkers and managers, potentially affecting your job performance and possibly getting promotions.
Experiences with this, every single job I've had an experience. I was fortunate enough to be given chances in all my jobs, even though explaining that I do have the disability, learning disabilities, it's going to affect how I work, it's going to affect how long it takes for me to learn specific things. But I've never really once encountered, when in that interviewing process with a job, them turning me down just because I mentioned that I have a disability.
Mm-hmm.
They've always given me a shot. Whether that shot works out or not, they've given me a shot.
Mm-hmm. I do know you face a lot of difficulty with one specific employer, if you want to talk about that, at the pizza shop, who tried to take advantage of you financially and paying you less than minimum wage.
He paid me less than minimum wage, he paid me under the table, and he didn't really pay me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I eventually just got tired of it and just left that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely, in my view, in the family's view, he targeted you because of your disability.
Yeah.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca. Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
Hi, welcome back. This is Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. So, if you missed it, we are discussing FAS and FASD. And now we're going to get into how FAS and FASD are spoken about in society. Danny, I know you feel very passionately about it. Take it away.
So, if you're listening in your car driving around right now, the experience you have with fetal alcohol syndrome, especially if you are not Indigenous, is seeing TikToks or seeing videos of people commenting under, like, Belle Delphine or some celebrity that they want to deem, quote, stupid. They will comment FAS, or they will comment, in Twitter or something. There will always be a reply. Yeah, a reply with the picture, and it's the diagram of the FAS facial features, and it serves only as a joke to be like, haha, look at this person. And that is so frustrating to me, because people with FAS are individuals who just want to be seen and heard and are equal humans living lives. And it's so upsetting that people, all they know about FAS is seemingly the facial features and nothing else.
And they don't understand all the, like, stigma and pain behind it and all the history. Sorry, not to cut you off, Danny, I think this, like, really relates to this bigger idea of how we discuss disability and mental illness in our society, is that it's oftentimes made a joke, which is A, just, like, not a kind thing for a human to do.
Absolutely.
And B, it's super harmful. Mm-hmm. It really dehumanizes anybody who lives with any of these conditions, which is terrible, because they are humans, and like Danny mentioned, like, just as equal, just as deserving of all the other good things
that people without disabilities
are deserving of.
Like, in people's minds, FAS only really exists as the babies and toddlers in the diagrams, and they see it as just a joke, because there is a lot of shame around it. There is an assumption that the biological mother was, there's a lot of classism, a lot of racism.
There's a lot of intersectionality at play.
Very much so. So there's this idea of, when we talk about FAS, we're literally just talking about the bio mom drinking while pregnant and then having a baby with a disability, and not considering that people with FAS are individuals. And one thing that I found really interesting was looking up celebrities with FASD. Daniel Radcliffe, who plays Harry Potter, has FASD.
Oh.
And there's so many people all around you. Like, I'm sure everyone knows someone in their life that has FASD, because it is quite common. It's just so not talked about because of the shame.
And that's really interesting. Danny, I know in the pre-interview, when we've just been chatting about this episode, you've really emphasized that FASD is preventable.
Yeah.
And it didn't really, like, and I was like, yeah, but in my head it didn't really click to me why that's so important until I think this moment.
Yeah, the shame of the biomother.
Like, the fact that there is more shame and not enough discussion and not enough respect for people with FAS and FASD is happening just further contributes to FAS and FASD.
Yeah, because it doesn't just stop at the bio mom drinking and giving birth. We are born as people, and we grow up as people, and we exist. So it's really frustrating with this preventable nature that, like, people tend to forget that the baby is born. There's nothing you can really do. You can shame the bio mom as much as you want, but, like, please don't do that.
This is not an invitation to
No, but people do that and then just forget about it. And it's like, you can't undo. Yeah, you can't undo what has already happened, and all you can do is support the biological parent and support the child who is going to be growing up. That's really all you can do. So just to shame someone and produced this stigma about how the bio mom drank, and there's all this classism around it, especially, and all of these just one-off jokes. You can't undo it.
It's so pretty. And now I'd kind of like to get into this, like, overarching theme of the Indigenous perspective with FAS and FASD. It's something that I think we've just kind of talked about from the start of this episode to now, and I think they are very much so intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
Danny, would you like to share why?
Yeah, so I guess I'm going to imagine that the listener just arrived to Canada and doesn't know anything. So I'm going to just assume that to give you a really basic understanding. Residential schools were created in the same image of the industrial schools of the U.S. that existed more towards the 1800s to 1900s. John A. Macdonald, the first Prime Minister of Canada, wanted to find a solution to the, quote, Indian problem. And his whole tactic was, the quote, this is a loose quote from him, was to kill the Indian and save the child. So residential schools were created, and it was mandatory for every single Indigenous child in Canada to be sent to a residential school forcefully, and the parents would be charged and arrested if they were not. The last one closed in 1996, and our grandpa went to one in the 1940s to Kamloops, and we don't know much about... My biological background is white, so my biological mother, she was white, and she did not experience that kind of trauma that led to the alcohol abuse. But we know that in your background, and our little brother who has FAS, it is especially due to Indigenous trauma. And residential schools, when people were sent home in the summer, or were sent home, they had been raised by abusive priests and nuns for the entirety of the year. So these people did not have parents, they did not have love, they did not experience how to raise a child and what that looks like. So when they were released, a lot of these people had no support, nothing. And a perspective that's often ignored is what the res looked like when the kids were gone. And I heard this heartbreaking story of, imagine the res filled with all these kids running around, and res is our casual term for a reservation or a reserve.
Yeah.
And there were all these kids running around the res, and imagine the next day, none. Every single child is gone. It's just adults that are heartbroken. There is nothing to turn to. There is no support. So alcohol became a crutch for our communities everywhere. And the lasting effects are so present today. And that's why it's so important, the Indigenous perspective of FAS, because it is extremely common due to an intersection of so many factors of the bio mom not having support, not being able to cope with the struggles and traumas that they're facing. And it's,
that's a very apt and in-depth discussion of how the Indigenous perspective plays into FAS and FASD. Thank you, Danny. Would you like to share a little bit about the Truth and Reconciliation Call to Action, number 34?
Yeah, so the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was a commission modeled after apartheid in South Africa ended. There was a Truth and Reconciliation Commission formed through court systems, so court testimony and interviews by victims and sometimes perpetrators of the oppression. So Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Canada has very specific calls to action outlining things we can do to improve what's happening. I believe between 6 and 12 have been implemented of, I believe there's 70-something, I could be very wrong. But this is Truth and Reconciliation Call to Action number 34. This has not been implemented. We call upon the governments of Canada, the provinces, and territories to undertake reforms to the criminal justice system to better address the needs of offenders with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, including, 1, providing increased community resources and powers for courts to ensure that FASD is properly diagnosed and that appropriate community supports are in place for those with FASD. Enacting statutory exemptions from mandatory minimum sentences of imprisonment for offenders affected by FASD. 3. Providing community, correctional, and parole resources to maximize the ability of people with FASD to live in the community. And number 5. adopting appropriate evaluation mechanisms to measure the effectiveness of such programs and ensure community safety.
Yeah, so this was a very clear acknowledgement that Indigenous communities struggle more with FAS and FASD, mm-hmm. and as Danny, you mentioned, the numbers of those struggling with FAS and FASD, or yeah. people who have FAS and FASD, are much higher in the yeah. Indigenous communities.
And we'll get into this more, incarceration and prison and criminality. And Jesse, do you have anything you want to add about how FAS may affect things like that, like getting in trouble with the law?
I feel like it would affect lots of kids because they don't really understand what necessarily they are doing is whether right or wrong, so they can't mm-hmm. decipher what the right's from the wrong, so they're more likely to make a mistake or end up doing something
mm-hmm.
that turns out to be not so legal.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's this knowledge that people with FAS and FASD are in more vulnerable positions mm-hmm. and can be taken advantage of, and oftentimes those situations can involve law enforcement, and those yeah. people are unfairly persecuted.
Yeah, there's one very famous case in the U.S. of a teenager with FAS who was tricked by an undercover cop at his school, who he thought the cop passed on as a friend who was struggling with addiction, and because of parents or something was unable to get the drug at that time, and the friend with FAS fully believed him and wanted to help him, and he had never bought drugs before, but he wanted to help his friend who was really struggling, and he did it, and he was put in prison. And there was a big conversation of FAS and mandatory minimum sentences. So basically, even if the judge says, hey, I see that there is definitely your disability played a role in your decision making here, and I don't want to sentence you to this much, there's a mandatory minimum number that they have to sentence them to.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
I feel like that's a good thing that they put that so kids with FASD who end up doing something they're not supposed to
mm-hmm.
and not knowing that they're doing it, for the example that you have given with the kid helping out the friend who ended up being an undercover cop, that way they don't get trying to find a way to word this
mm-hmm. punished for having difficulty
punished
understanding
something. Yeah, punished for something that they don't 100% fully understand.
Yeah, yeah. So you believe that the Truth and Reconciliation Call to Action number 34 should definitely be implemented.
I feel like it should 100%
yeah,
be implemented.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, that feels like a no-brainer. Danny, would you like to talk a little bit about the justice system and how it interacts with Indigenous people with FASD?
Yeah, I'm not sure how the format is, but hopefully these will be put in the description or so you can access mm-hmm. the studies that we're talking about, because I'll just say in a study, and then you'll have access to everything else on the website. So in one study, 12% of Indigenous children were already involved in the justice system, and these are Indigenous children with FAS. Despite a median age of just 9 years old, many Indigenous children with FASD will become involved in the justice system in their teen or later years. Often they are disadvantaged when dealing with apprehending officers due to disabilities in various aspects of their cognitive functions. So to elaborate, this might mean that your reaction when being questioned by a cop may be very different to a neurotypical person, and the officer may not understand that at all and may see you as guilty, and it may go down a whole spiral, and this is pretty common. In British Columbia, 60% of adults, so people more than 12 years of age, diagnosed with FASD had been involved with the justice system. Given the relative lack of diagnostic resources in Indigenous communities, a considerable number of Indigenous offenders with FASD have likely never been diagnosed as having this disorder. There's also increased diagnostic resources for FASD in the correctional system that would allow emphasis on rehabilitation and support, one of the most important factors for reducing secondary disabilities and improving the long-term outcome of FASD is an early diagnosis before the age of six, like both of us had. Delay in diagnosis may increase the risk of secondary disabilities, such as poor school experiences, inappropriate sexual behavior, alcohol or drug abuse, and incarceration and retention in the justice system. I'd also like to mention some things that I did leave out earlier. So FASD is frequently associated with ADHD, which both Jesse and I were diagnosed with around the age of six, very young. Deficits in executive functioning, sleep disturbance, learning difficulties, difficulty organizing, difficulty learning from mistakes, and lack of inhibition can lead to lifelong problems adapting and functioning in society. This can include things like hygiene, taking care of a house, household chores that can feel very overwhelming, and some things that society deems necessary may feel unnecessary to those with FASD, making conflicts and judgments of people just not understanding. And children with FASD have lower health-related quality of life than children with physical disabilities or those who lived with childhood cancer. And FAS is the leading preventable cause of neurodevelopmental disabilities among Canadian children and youth. So, and the last thing I wanted to add is that there's really high rates of what's called secondary disabilities, so another thing you might have, which includes depression, panic disorders, and maladaptive behavior, such as antisocial and, quote, delinquent behavior, impulsivity, bullying, destructive behavior, or self-harm. And then the last thing, in one surveillance of 473 individuals with FASD, 94% had mental health problems identified as secondary disabilities, such as depression, ADHD, and panic disorders.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Turn your radio to the CITR 101.9 FM on a Tuesday, specifically at 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. for saxophone Hella Primiti or saxophone Lenui. Hosted by moi, accompanied with the improvisationalists, saxophonists, composers, and musicians of our great era since the 70s. Such as Anthony Braxton, Albert Bailey, Solange, Ghostface Killah, Ornette Coleman, Sonny Rollins, that's 1 p.m. or 11 p.m. on a Tuesday to listen to saxophone a la Primiti or saxophone Lenui.
Hi, I'm
This is All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. I'm here with Danny and Jesse, if you missed it, and we're talking about FAS and FASD. So I think we have a greater grasp and understanding of FAS, FASD, the differences, and how it relates to the Indigenous community,
mm-hmm.
and also how it's preventable, and how stigma only contributes. Yeah. So I think the like greater question that I have for both of you, Jesse, if you'd like to go first after I ask this, how should we start talking about FASD? How should we start treating it in society?
I feel like society should, in a sense, be a bit more lenient on people, kids, adults, really, with FASD. Get the time to know it. Get the time to understand it, mainly. Because, from what I know, FASD does affect everyone in its own different way. Just because two same kids come from the same family who might have FASD,
mm-hmm.
it could affect that both of them completely different.
Yep, like us three, like you, me, and our younger brother.
Yeah. So I feel like society should take more time and doing the research, taking the time to understand more of how FASD does affect different people, and before just coming out to judge about it, to make all these assumptions
mm-hmm.
about it, even though they don't fully understand.
Yeah, I think that really relates to the quote, knowledge is power. Having research and an understanding of something, you know, informs humans, society, to do better. And
yep.
unfortunately, this happens to be the case. There usually isn't a lot of research on disabilities or research around what Indigenous people experience. So
mm-hmm.
that's the intersections.
Yeah.
It's the intersectionality portion of it.
I just wanted to say a quote. I don't remember where I heard this. It might have been Notorious Cree on Instagram, but it was, if you believe that every child matters, have compassion for our people on the street, because many of them are the children that survived.
Yeah.
And that's very important. FAS, everyone is deserving of respect who has FAS and deserving of equal love and treatment. And that includes those living in active addiction who are unhoused,
mm-hmm.
because that is many people who are unhoused and living in active addiction in the DTES who are Indigenous struggle with FAS, and there's a heavy judgment. But I feel like these same people will wear an orange shirt on Orange Shirt Day, and I feel like it's important to acknowledge that.
Thank you, Danny. That is really important, is to realize, like, and like, no one could ever cover how complex it is, the
mm-hmm.
relationship between Indigenous communities, substance abuse, and then FAS and FASD, and also the history of residential schools. Like, I really
mm-hmm.
think that someone could write like a 300-page academic thesis
yes.
and not really be able to fully cover how complex it is.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But I think that in the context of us discussing FAS and FASD, like, there just needs to really, be a perspective of compassion and empathy,
mm-hmm.
and really being open to understanding the history.
Yeah.
And there really does need to be more research.
Absolutely.
Research is what reduces stigma, knowing about
mm-hmm.
something, and not just letting it be the mysterious unknown.
Yeah, it's still so unknown. And one thing I think about a lot when I think about FAS is, I've done little experiments a little bit. If you look up, I think my child has autism, you will see floods of information. If you look up, I think my child has FAS, it is mostly academic, scholarly, or resources for adoptive parents, children with FAS, for foster parents.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on TikTok and look up like tips for managing sensory overwhelm, or just tips for dealing with the difficulties that come with being on the autistic spectrum, there is zero, it's like zilch, like nothing for people with FAS, despite it being not some hyper rare thing that is so distant. You likely know someone who has FASD, and I really want to see that. I want to be able to see a post talking about FAS without opening the comments and it all being jokes about celebrities that people deem as, quote, stupid.
Yeah. Thank you, Danny. That is really important. It's just, like, and that is part of destigmatizing, is having knowledge be accessible and not just in, like, scholarly articles, but in the ways other information about other disabilities are mainstream.
Yeah.
And taken seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Do Jesse, Danny, do you have any parting words about how we should go, like, any listener going forward should consider FASD and what they can do?
So many things that could be said, but I guess more important one is, if you know someone who does have FASD, take the time to understand them before putting all your judgment before them.
I'm seeing them as a person.
Compassion first is just, like, it really should be the default. Danny, do you have any parting words?
Yeah, I guess just seeing people with FAS as human beings and not immediately putting that label of FAS and that is all you are. And understanding that people with FAS are individuals with hobbies and interests, and they just want to be heard and loved. And it's okay that people with disabilities can't do things sometimes. There's this idea of you have to be exceptional. I can do anything you can. It just looks a little different. It's okay to really struggle with your judgment, to struggle with your emotions. And I think people should be more accommodating of that without this narrative of you have to be the exceptional, like, exceptionality.
Yeah.
You have to be strong and not a victim mindset.
You can just exist.
You can just exist.
You can just exist and live your own life.
Yeah, and you can struggle, and that's okay. And you can say, like, hey, I want to have a friendship with you, but I'm going to struggle with certain things, and I want you to be understanding of that.
Those are very beautiful parting words, Sammy. This episode has been heavy, but I hope any listener that walks away from this walks away with a greater understanding, because that's honestly what we came here to do today, is to spread awareness. And I hope that just by more people hearing about it will inspire some research and more compassion.
Yes. So if you see a comment in one of those comments or one of those reply tweets, don't like it and laugh it's just a joke. Report it.
Yeah, report it.
Report it. Educate your friends when you hear a joke, a quote joke, about FAS or FASD. Don't be a bystander when you hear these kinds of things.
Thank you so much, Danny and Jesse. Your time has been greatly appreciated. And that is today's episode of All Access Pass. We will... Well, you...
Thank you. this might pacify, but it will hold me torn. Let me out of my bedroom. I wanna walk around, wanna go sit and talk to all my favorite friends. I'm so grateful I'll never feel like that again.
Right now, I am tuned in to Crimes and Treasons,
goddammit.
Hey,
yo, this is Isaiah Rashad.
Crimes and Treasons, this is your boy Just Blaze.
Yo, 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 what's good? It's Bodega Bams, a.k.a. Poppy, a.k.a. Young Don Francisco.
Hey, yo, it's Baby No Money.
What's good, y'all? It's your boy Terrell Safady.
Hey, what's up? It's Tion Gibbs.
What up? This is Fango.
And this is your boy Waldo.
And you're listening to Crimes and Treasons Radio.
Yeah, bitch.
What's up? This is Peanut Butter Wolf. You're listening to Crimes and Treason Radio.
Hello, this is Blow Fly.
Hey, this is Halo.
Hey, what's up? It's St. John, and you're not listening to Crimes and Treason. It's lit.
Hey, I know who it is, man. It's your boy, Saha the Prince.
Yo, what up, though? This is Ill Tone from Blacktivity.
Yo, peace, family. It's your Shabwala Dizzy Rice.
Yo, this is Remy Wolf.
Hey!
Yo, what's poppin', man? It's I Am Super.
It's Jay Worthy, a.k.a. P Worthy.
Hey, yo, you already know what time it is. It's your boy, ASAP Yams, a.k.a. Yamborghini, a.k.a. Lil Newport, a.k.a. I got too many motherfucking aliases, but you already know what time it is. Crime and treason in this motherfucking. Shout out to these motherfuckers. They putting it down with that real trill shit.
Yo, it's Cam Blow Eye.
Crimes and treasons, that's what we believe in while we blowing the treason.
Crooks out.
Tune in to Vancouver's rap radio show every Tuesday, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM.